A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 494. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Primeval. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're back with the second part of our review of this ITV show that combines time travel, dinosaurs appearing in modern Britain, all sorts of fun, exciting adventures. It ran for five series from 2007 to 2011 with a total of 36 45-minute episodes. And as we've said, fun, family entertainment, a team of scientists dealing with dangerous dinosaurs, and the mystery of these strange anomalies in time that the dinosaurs pop out of by accident. What are these anomalies and what are the implications of them? We'll learn more as this goes on.
Yes, absolutely. So continuing on a little bit, the crew of the Anomaly Research Center, the ARC, has to deal with threats from creatures on land, at sea, and in the air. And we get to quite a bit of running and jumping and fighting and shooting at things. Lots of action stuff in here. For sure. And as things progress, we get to more threats from humans. And initially, that is from Professor Cutter's ex-wife, or presumed dead wife initially, Helen, and the various things she's getting up to.
Indeed, as we said last time, she's a complicated character with an agenda all of her own. And we'll learn how changes in the past can affect the present and even the future, because it is a sort of time travel show. People, characters are falling through time when they get caught up in one of these anomalies. And again, without giving too much away, there's a particular change in one character that happens at the end of the first series, which seems to be caused by something that happened in the past. So it does deal with the implications of time travel a bit, Brian.
Yes, it does. And they get into parallel timelines and changing history and that sort of thing somewhat as well.
But of course, it's not just these dinosaurs and anomalies. They've got to deal with politicians. They've got to deal with the funding. They've got politicians and civil servants who may have their own agendas, who may have ideas about exploiting the anomalies to deal with other real world problems. And we've got characters who appear at the start. We should perhaps point out that Abby Maitland, Connor Temple, and James Lester, the man from the Ministry, are the only characters who run through the entire five series and are there right from episode one to the finale, Brian, because otherwise we get a little bit of changing as characters leave the team for a variety of reasons.
Yes, that's right. And it does allow them to bring in new actors and sometimes some quite interesting ones. Jason Fleming, who we remember from the 2005 version of the Quatermass experiment, he's a regular for some time. And Alexander Siddig, who was Dr. Bashir on Deep Space Nine, is in quite a bit. And Anton Lesser from Game of Thrones, and we remember him from Invasion Earth, he's in there as well. And it allows them to move characters in and out as well. So sometimes some of these new characters who are introduced don't have the motivations that we think they do at the beginning by the time we see them later on. So they do take advantage of that fluid team quite nicely sometimes. And I'll mention there is a new action hero type leader for the team called Matt Anderson, played by Kieran McMenamin, is a character who always seems to be working against the rest of the crew, and we're not quite sure why. So they do some interesting things there too.
They do indeed. So we've got at the core our mismatched team of scientists. There is a certain amount of running down corridors. So obviously this show does get compared to the revival of Doctor Who from 2005, so 2 years before Primeval hits the screens. But as we discussed last time, Brian, this was a comparison that goes right back to the development of this show, which was being developed in the early 2000s by Tim Haynes and Adrian Hodges, right about the same time that Russell T. Davies returned to the BBC with a specific intention of bringing back the Doctor. So I suppose it's not surprising that there are some similarities.
Yes, there are some. We do end up often with a central scientist figure and a younger, more action hero, male assistant type character, and a younger woman played by someone who used to be a pop singer. So we get a few comparisons to Doctor Who as it came back in 2005, which is interesting.
Very much so, yes.
We do also get Professor Cutter sharing some scientific technobabble with Connor Temple as, you know, the quirky, geeky character in there too.
Now, we've talked about this last time that we were going to mention a few other shows that Primeval reminds us of, not just Doctor Who. Science team shows like the BBC's spy-fi series from the 90s, Bugs, which is another long show that we may get to at some point in the future. There's a sort of science team in their base in UFO from 1970, one of our classics. There's other sort of shows that it sort of gives us ideas about as well, Brian.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a Torchwood similarity and so on. It has a similar feel to a bunch of things, for sure.
I'm also aware of a kids show called The Spartacle Mystery, which deals with the implications of an accident at a Large Hadron Collider, which doesn't seem to be available at the moment for us to get hold of, but it's, you know, that I gather has a similar sort of science team at its heart.
Interesting. I also see some connections to Stargate SG-1, a long-running American series, and to a point Stargate Atlantis as well. And certainly with having this group of characters traveling through a network of wormholes they didn't create, and also the various threats from organizations within their own government, there are some similarities, and sometimes the feel of the adventure can feel a bit Stargate-y to me. That started when they went through an anomaly and ended up in a desert cut off and trying to get back.
I've never actually seen any of the Stargate TV series, only the original film, Brian. So yeah, but I can see what you mean. Obviously, these shows with a central science team make the science look like a lot of fun and hopefully influence people, you know, kids to study science. But we have to say, we've talked about this many a time, Brian, if you depicted real science and real computer work on screen, it's quite boring. So this gives us the sort of visual effects and the fun excitement of science with mad gadgets. Connor is always coming up with a mad gadget to help detect or predict anomalies. There's a certain amount of science fiction weaponry developed to help them deal with the creature features, the monsters of a week. And of course, the actual use of computers and the stuff that appears on screens, I'm sure, makes you scoff slightly, Brian.
Yeah, it certainly can be a little strange in this one. But we also get Connor and sometimes other characters doing the work in developing things of what would really have to be a large team of people. And also he seems to be the expert in a number of different fields. So, you know, it sort of condenses things down quite a bit in those sorts of ways.
Yes. Scientists have to be an expert in everything in these sort of shows.
Sometimes it seems that way. So we should talk about spin-offs, because there were a number number here, spinning off into various media. There were four novelizations of the early episodes, and those were aimed at a 12-plus age range audience, and then another four original novels based on Primeval. All of those are available on Kindle. There was also a children's magazine called Totally Primeval, which featured comic strips and photo features and games and so on. And there were even sticker books from Ladybird. So there were some things for younger viewers there, which is kind of cool.
Yes, they sort of knew where their audience was in a way. Now, there was also some mini webisodes and a game. Now, the webisodes I thought came in the gap, but reading the Primeval Wiki, they seem to have appeared during season 3, and they would have little mini sort of prequel webisodes that appeared every week. Those are still available on YouTube to find and watch. Sadly, what isn't available, as far as I can tell, is Primeval Evolved, which was the interactive web game that ITV put up on the website in 2009. So again, it's around about the time of the third series. That seems to be gone, I'm afraid, Brian. Nobody seems to know where if it still exists, unfortunately. But it was there. And there were action figures based on Primeval, particularly from the characters from the first series. Now, I haven't looked for these and whether or not they must be on eBay, but I don't know what prices they're going for. But anyway, there was lots of tie-ins with this show, Brian.
You don't have a large collection of Primeval action figures, Eamon?
I try not to have any action figures now, Brian.
There was actually a tabletop role-playing game developed by Cubicle 7 as well. I believe that was on the same role-playing system as the Doctor Who role-playing game, or at least a related one. So that was there, out of print, but the books for that are floating around on eBay and that sort of thing as well.
Oh, nice.
They actually optioned the series for a film production to make a Primeval movie in 2009, but that went into development hell and it never happened. What did happen, however, was Primeval the New World, which was a 13-episode series for Space the Imagination Station in Canada. That's now called CTV Sci-Fi, the station is. And that ran in 2012. And that was what seemed like it might be a reboot, but it was actually a spinoff where one or two characters from the original run do make appearances in it. So that was sort of interesting.
And is that still available in Region 1, Brian?
That is available to purchase on iTunes in North America, and I believe it's also maybe available to purchase on Amazon Prime as well. It looks like it's available for Prime subscribers in Canada, but that's now expired in the US, but it is on iTunes. And that's where I got it. So I did watch Primeval the New World.
Okay. You perhaps won't be surprised that it doesn't seem to be available to stream over here in Region 2. And the DVD release has been deleted and is now quite expensive, although it does seem to be available for rental from Cinema Paradiso. What you can find is the Primeval the New World novelization, which is still available over here, strangely. So there was a book from that series as well.
Okay. I have not read any of the Primeval-related novels.
No, me neither.
Okay, so I think it's time to talk about some of our own feelings about Primeval, more than we already have. So, Eamon, what did you like about Primeval?
Well, let's start with visual effects for 2007 to 2011 and say that they actually look pretty good for the time for a TV budget. We do get an awful lot of dinosaurs. We know they're being tweaked slightly to make them look more scary and so on. But in terms of the visual effects and the visual effect of the anomalies themselves, pretty good, I'd say, Brian.
Yeah, I was actually impressed with how well those stand up at this point. And I think part of it, for the various creatures, they did a good job at getting the lighting to match, which is always key for this kind of thing. And they did that quite well. So that was nice to see. I will also say that I enjoyed the characters. I found they were fun and engaging. And when they replaced characters with new ones, the new ones were not copies of their predecessors. And they were generally interesting characters as well. The replacements were still good.
Yeah, they are fun, particularly up front. And some of the characters who initially bothered me slightly do tend to settle down a bit as the series progresses. I'm thinking of Ben Miller as James Lester, who just seems to be obnoxious to begin with, but actually his character improves as the series progresses. Yeah, they're all fun. They do a lot of the running, jumping and shouting, shall I say, that this sort of show requires. There's a fair bit of running around in this series, Brian.
Yes. Some of the long-running characters in this do get some character development. You mentioned that with James Lester. We sort of learn more about him as things go on. But with characters like Abby, she is, you know, goes through an experience partway through it. We're getting in slightly more spoilery territory here. Connor and Abby are stuck in the past for a period of time, and she comes back and she's just not the same. She's sort of wounded by that experience. And I thought some of the things that they did like that were pretty good for a show of this type.
The music and the titles are good. They're very effective. And there's plenty of ideas in this series, Brian.
Yes, they always have new ideas and new things being introduced. And I generally like them, and they generally, for a show that could seem a bit monster of the week, a bit repetitive in that way, they were bringing new things in quite a bit, which I liked. I will mention that at a certain point, they started bringing in history in addition to prehistory, and had some historical characters who became part of it. In particular, there was a Victorian character called Emily Merchant, played by Ruth Bradley, and she was sort of a really interesting character there who brought some interesting things about Victorian times and about the experiences that that group of people had on the run from dinosaurs and trying to save people from various creatures and so on. So yeah, they did some interesting things with some of those things.
I know, as we've got this, you've put this in our notes, it frequently reinvents itself in a way as the series progresses.
It really does. And I'll spoiling more as we go on. At the end of the first season, something happens in the past that changes the present, and they don't fix it. They don't make it go back to the way it was. The present's changed, and the couple of characters who were in the past, so remember both versions, or, you know what it was like before, they just have to live with it. And it sort of gives us a little bit of a soft reboot, and improved the show at that point, I think. So yeah, they did some things that were kind of interesting in this. It generally was a show that I found a lot of fun, and there were some things to enjoy here for sure.
And of course, you can't go wrong with dinosaurs in terms of family entertainment. Endlessly fascinating to a younger audience. Something that Doctor Who, the new Doctor Who and old Doctor Who, has not shied away from, has done a few times as well. And here we have Dinosaur of the Week almost for a lot of it.
Dinosaurs and time travel, there you go. And they get into all sorts of creatures. They have, you know, prehistoric insects and, you know, all sorts of weird things, and some that they've created that are either from the past and unknown to science or are from the distant future. So they do a lot with their creatures in this.
Excellent. Now, did you have anything else to mention in the positives, Brian, before I ask a few questions in the more sort of negative side of the show?
I think moving to the negatives now is fine.
Okay. Were there too many characters to begin with? Was it slightly overstuffed with characters in the first season?
I did not find that. I was okay with that side of it. What I struggled with at the beginning, and it's more obvious now than when I watched it at the time, the people's appearances in it are too heavily produced. It feels like we have a team of fashion models or something. You know, everyone looks like they're dressed and made up for, you know, a modeling shoot somewhere.
Indeed, yes, there is a bit of that. They all do look rather gorgeous. Yeah, I mean, James Murray seems to have been, he's the pretty boy member of the team. And then, of course, there is Hannah Spirit from S Club 7 playing Abby, who I'm quite glad they do develop her character over the five seasons, because I did find in the first couple of episodes, having excuses for her to appear in her underwear seemed a little bit gratuitous.
Yeah, that bugged me too, for sure.
Yeah. I would say that being a pop star, you'll not be surprised to learn that Hannah Spirit's character has about a dozen different hairstyles over the five seasons, I think, Brian.
It must be something like that, yeah.
And they all look pretty fabulous, yeah.
You're right. They do have, you know, every opportunity to have her wearing very little at the beginning. And they also, partly related to that, they deal with the romantic relationships and the potential romantic relationships a lot in the early part of it. And I was pleased when they, you know, moderated that somewhat over time, because it was a little overdone how focused they were on it at the beginning.
Yeah. Now, I have a question about the lighting, and it may be answered by your observation about, you know, getting the lighting correct for both the live actors and the visual effects in the same scene. But I noted, particularly in the first couple of series, this sort of slightly oversaturated, or maybe that's not the right word, it's sort of bleached out, very white lighting in a lot of them. It looked very much like something from the noughties, and it bugged me a bit this time, Brian.
Yeah, I don't mind that, but I think it is something that is very much that time period of British television when they were coming back to doing science fiction and the, you know, these sorts of things, and figuring out how some of these sorts of things would work in terms of doing the visual. And by then, high definition video was around. I'm not sure if they were shooting on high def or not. The time when this started, I know Doctor Who was not. They were on standard definition. But doing things on digital and on high def, all of that was new in this period of time, certainly for the first year or two. So that may play into it, that everyone, certainly in the UK, was figuring out how to do these things then. And at that point, it could be a little bit bright. It didn't bother me, but you do have that. And I think some of it may play into how they were doing the matching for the animation, because lighting is a huge factor with how things blend into the live action footage.
Yeah, that may be the answer. It just bugged me slightly looking at it now. Everything's so white and bleached and sort of blue light. But there we go.
I will sneak in a little positive here in the middle. There was a character called Rex that was this little flying dinosaur that Abby collects in the past and unrealistically becomes sort of a pet, but nevertheless is sort of a delightful character in the early part of this.
Good fun. Now, of course, they run down corridors. They have monsters of the week. Ben Miller's character even at some point makes the joke about this, sort of self-referential nod to it. Something, again, that Doctor Who has also done. Does it have a slight problem with the sort of just monster of the week episodic nature of this show?
So I wasn't too bothered by the monster of the week style stuff, because by the time we got to the second season, there was a bit more variety. The side of that bugged me a bit was how everyone seems to turn into an action hero all of a sudden. where, you know, they had military people available and they were sometimes there, but often the scientists would be doing all this action type stuff, which seemed a little bit strange.
They're all quite good at kickboxing and using science fiction weapons, it seems.
Yeah, and we get, you know, paleontologists who are wailing away with machine guns and what have you.
Yeah, it does seem a bit strange. Anything else you wanted to mention in the negatives before we start moving towards recommendations, Brian?
I think that covers it for me. Shall we go to recommendations?
Yeah, let's do it. You start us off, Brian. What are you going to say to our listeners about Primeval?
Okay, so I am going to recommend this because it's good fun. I enjoyed it a lot. It has sort of a fun science fiction feel to it where you get different groups with different agendas and you get different sort of things with the creatures, but also science fiction and time travel type things coming into it in different ways across the series. So, yeah, I enjoyed this. I had fun with it. It's not the deepest thing we've covered, but it's fun. So, yes, I would recommend it.
Okay. I, as you know, had less fun and had a bit more of a problem with Primeval. I only ever watched the first series when it originally came out and didn't stick with it. I thought Doctor Who was doing all of the stuff that I wanted to do it at the time instead of Primeval. It does get better than just the Monster of the Week as the series progresses. And if you've got a Now TV subscription over here, and therefore you don't have to pay any more money for it, I would suggest dipping into the odd episode here or there to see if it suits you. But I wouldn't recommend spending the money on it at the moment. I think there's better ways to spend your viewing money at the moment. So it's a sort of like cautious not recommend from me, but a very much like a more hopeful recommendation from yourself, Brian.
Yes, I think that's about right. So, in summary, Primeval introduces us to these strange anomalies which open doorways through time, usually to the distant past, and allow dinosaurs and other prehistoric creatures, and occasionally far future creatures, to come through into our time and wreak all kinds of havoc. And we end up with a team of scientists and others working for the British government who keep this secret from the public and contain these incursions of various creatures to avoid people getting hurt and killed. And we get into lots of things with time travel and people coming from different times and various things with the technology and the science fictional elements become important as the series goes on.
Do get in touch and let us know what you thought about Primeval. And please come back and join us next time. It is time for a Christmas ghost story. And strangely enough, by coincidence, we are sticking with Douglas Henshall, who appears in an adaptation of Susan Hill's The Small Hand that appeared on Channel 5 in 2019. So it's a Christmas ghost story to talk about next time, Brian.
Always good to be back to our Christmas ghost stories.
Indeed.
Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there. You can follow us on Threads and Instagram. We are British_invaders_podcast on both of those platforms.
Yes, find us on the socials and tell us your views about Primeval and what you thought of our own review. And come and find us as part of the Voice of Geeks Network, which you will find at VogNetwork.com. Lots of content, lots of Twitch streaming going on at the Voice of Geeks on VogNetwork.com. Tell them Brian and Eamon said hello.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until the next time we fall through a time-traveling anomaly, it's Eamon in England also signing off.